dietro ai numeri di cui si discute, giustamente nell'analisi dei flussi migratori ci sono persone, ci sono le loro storie. Persone e storie che devono essere il cuore di ogni politica efficace sull'immigrazione e l'asilo.
Mas as migrações são uma realidade desde que existem seres humanos num planeta. E assim continuará a ser enquanto a espécie humana conseguir sobreviver. É também inegável que a sua gestão exige uma ação europeia comum. E devemos, portanto, continuar o trabalho sobre um novo pacto para as migrações e o asilo, tentando encontrar o de equilíbrio adequado entre as suas dimensões interna e externa, sem esquecer a migração legal.
Geral feito é que as comunidades migrantes contribuem e enriquecem a nossa sociedade. Cientes de que, ao abordar tais desafios de longo prazo, estamos a dar o nosso contributo para uma melhor Europa, respeitadora dos seus valores e princípios.
Buongiorno a tutti, a coloro che sono presenti, a coloro che ci seguono, che sono collegati con noi da remoto. Volevo salutare il Presidente dell'Assemblea della Repubblica Portoghese, gli altri Presidenti dei Parlamenti Nazionali, il Commissario Schinas. È un grande piacere dare a tutti il benvenuto alla partecipazione alla seconda conferenza interparlamentare di alto livello su immigrazione e asilo. Lo faccio, come dicevo, con il collega Presidente dell'Assemblea della Repubblica Portoghese, Eduardo Ferro Rodriguez, che con noi ha promosso e organizzato questa conferenza in collaborazione con altri Presidenti dei Parlamenti Nazionali del Trio di Presidenza, i miei colleghi Wolfgang Schäuble, Presidente del Bundestag, Igor Zorzic, Presidente dell'Assemblea Nazionale Slovena. Desidero ringraziare, come dicevo, il Commissario Schinas per aver accettato il nostro invito ad aprire con il suo discorso questa conferenza. La seconda in tempi di pandemia e vogliamo continuare, non vogliamo fermarci qui, vogliamo promuovere un ampio dibattito sulla gestione dell'immigrazione e dell'asilo. E vogliamo farlo oggi coinvolgendo la dimensione esterna dei fenomeni migratori. Vogliamo rivolgere il nostro sguardo al mondo attorno a noi, alle ragioni per cui milioni di persone nel mondo si mettono in cammino, si muovono e vedono spesso nell'Europa una meta per una vita migliore. Questa immagine riflessa dell'Unione Europea come terra di opportunità, di libertà, di prosperità, deve farci riflettere sulla nostra forza, sulla nostra responsabilità e deve anche servire a farci più consapevoli degli strumenti economici e politici che abbiamo a disposizione per gestire con i nostri partner nel mondo la mobilità umana in un modo coordinato, attento, solidaristico, attento ai diritti delle persone, perché come abbiamo detto tante volte, dietro ogni persona, anziana, ogni donna, ogni bambino, c'è una storia di vita che dobbiamo rispettare. E ritengo quindi che questa riunione possa farci riflettere sulle scelte da compiere per contribuire a un approccio globale e sostenibile alla gestione dei movimenti delle persone e dell'impatto che la pandemia del Covid-19 ha avuto su di essi in questo ultimo anno e mezzo. Sono convinto che ascoltando i reciproci punti di vista in questa conferenza interparlamentare di alto livello possiamo cominciare a trovare un terreno comune per scelte coraggiose, innovative, che possano dare finalmente all'Unione Europea una politica comune in materia di asilo e migrazione, partendo dalle opinioni dei parlamentari democraticamente eletti dai nostri cittadini. Abbiamo scelto di discutere oggi, dicevo, della dimensione esterna dei fenomeni migratori e delle politiche di asilo, perché sappiamo bene che solo alzando lo sguardo sull'instabilità, le crisi, la povertà, le violazioni dei diritti umani che si verificano oltre le nostre frontiere, potremmo aggredire le cause, capirle meglio e capire perché milioni di persone continuano a mettersi in cammino. Oggi poi vediamo come la pandemia di Covid-19 stia avendo un profondo impatto sui modelli migratori a livello locale e mondiale e un effetto moltiplicatore sul movimento forzato di persone nel mondo, soprattutto dove l'accesso alle cure, alla sanità non è garantito. La pandemia ha interrotto i percorsi di mobilità, ha bloccato i migranti, ha distrutto posti di lavoro e ha distrutto anche reddito. Ha bloccato i migranti, ha ridotto le rimesse e ha spinto milioni di persone, di popolazioni vulnerabili verso la povertà. La migrazione e l'asilo sono già di fatto parte integrante dell'azione esterna dell'Unione Europea, ma esse devono diventare parte di una più forte e più coesa politica estera dell'Unione Europea. Siamo il primo donatore nella crisi siriana sin dal suo tragico inizio 10 anni fa. Quest'anno alla 5ª conferenza sul futuro della Siria e della regione promossa dall'Unione Europea e dalle Nazioni Unite, l'Unione Europea e gli Stati membri hanno stanziato 3,7 miliardi di euro dei 5,3 complessivi e l'Unione resta ad oggi il maggior donatore mondiale nella crisi siriana con 24,9 miliardi di euro che abbiamo messo a sostegno dell'aiuto umanitario, dell'aiuto ai rifugiati, agli sfollati in Siria, nella regione, cercando di stabilizzare quello che è instabile. Ma questo importante sforzo economico al servizio delle persone resterà una goccia nel mare, se non sapremo metterlo al servizio di un'azione politica e diplomatica perché i siriani abbiano il diritto di decidere del loro futuro, di decidere del loro paese, come è giusto che sia. Per sostenere un percorso di stabilizzazione vera che permetta alla Siria di essere di nuovo un paese sicuro e ai rifugiati di rientrare in sicurezza. Oggi la Siria non è un paese sicuro e nessuno dei nostri paesi membri può considerarlo tale. Anche in Libia l'Unione Europea lavora da anni con l'Alto Commissariato delle Nazioni Unite per i rifugiati, con l'Organizzazione Mondiale delle Migrazioni per fornire assistenza alle persone rinchiuse nei centri di detenzione governativi che spesso ci fanno soffrire quando guardiamo quelle immagini, per cercare di garantire protezione a chi ne ha diritto, sostegno a chi vuole rientrare. Abbiamo sostenuto il Niger nello sforzo di accoglienza delle persone che arrivano ogni giorno dal lungo e terribile viaggio nel deserto, che precede spesso la prigionia in Libia e poi l'imbarco, spesso fatale, nel Mediterraneo verso l'Italia. Abbiamo assistito i migranti in transito e aiutato chi voleva tornare a casa, ma tutto questo deve ancor più fortemente accompagnarsi a una politica comune per dare stabilità alla Libia, per stabilizzare e mettere in sicurezza il Sahel insieme ai nostri alleati, ai nostri partner africani. Non si tratta di azioni distinte, La politica di gestione dei movimenti umani è una componente di una politica estera, di un'azione diplomatica che l'Unione deve ora mettere in campo, superando divisioni, candidandosi ad essere non solo un donatore globale, ma un attore politico globale. Il mondo e il Mediterraneo hanno bisogno di una Libia stabile e democratica, che decida del proprio futuro. E anche noi rilanciamo l'invito alle potenze estere presenti in Libia a non interferire nel processo di pace e a diminuire la loro presenza militare. Una politica estera che metta al centro le persone, lo sviluppo umano, la democrazia, i diritti, la sicurezza, la lotta al cambiamento climatico. In questo contesto, il nuovo patto sull'asilo e l'immigrazione, proposto dalla Commissione europea lo scorso settembre, ha posto un forte accento sulla cooperazione con i paesi di origine e di transito dei flussi migratori, sulla base di partenariati bilaterali complessivi per lo sviluppo, che abbiano al centro la gestione della mobilità regolare delle persone. E abbiamo bisogno di partenariati globali, trasparenti, soggetti a controllo democratico, nell'ambito dei quali i nostri parlamenti possano esercitare i propri poteri di autorità, autorità di bilancio, di controllo. Signore e signori, colleghe e colleghi, anche in questi giorni assistiamo all'arrivo di centinaia di persone su carrette del mare nel Mediterraneo, persone disperate, che arrivano a nuoto sulle coste spagnole, ma anche attraverso i Balcani o le Alpi italiane, francesi. Io credo che sia nostro dovere innanzitutto salvare le vite, salvare le donne e gli uomini. Non è più accettabile lasciare questa responsabilità solo alle organizzazioni non governative che svolgono una attività di supplenza. Dobbiamo tornare a pensare a un'azione comune dell'Unione Europea nel Mediterraneo per salvare le persone e tolga terreno ai trafficanti. Occorre un meccanismo europeo di ricerca e salvataggio in mare. Secondo, dobbiamo garantire che le persone bisognose possano arrivare nell'Unione non rischiando la vita, ma in modo sicuro. Abbiamo bisogno di canali umanitari da definire insieme all'Alto Commissariato delle Nazioni Unite per i rifugiati e dobbiamo lavorare insieme a un sistema europeo di reinsediamento fondato sulla nostra responsabilità comune. Stiamo parlando di persone che non possono dare un che possono anche darci un grande contributo alla nostra ripresa, alla ripresa delle nostre società, delle nostre economie colpite dalla pandemia, colpite dal calo demografico. E grazie alle loro competenze, al loro lavoro, alla loro voglia di vivere con noi. Terzo, dobbiamo mettere in opera una politica europea di accoglienza degli immigrati. Definiamo insieme i criteri, ad esempio di un permesso unico di ingresso e di soggiorno. Valutiamolo a livello nazionale con le necessità dei nostri mercati del lavoro. Durante la pandemia interi settori si sono fermati per l'assenza di lavoratori immigrati. Abbiamo bisogno di un'immigrazione regolata per la ripresa delle nostre società, per la tenuta dei nostri sistemi di protezione sociale. Signore e signori, dobbiamo superare il sistema di Dublino per una cooperazione autentica tra gli Stati membri basata su un meccanismo permanente di solidarietà, ripartizione e responsabilità. Senza politiche europee, ce lo insegna il Covid, non si affrontano sfide globali. Nessuno può farlo da solo e nessuno deve essere lasciato solo. Il ruolo dei parlamenti è fondamentale in tutto questo. Sono certo che la riunione di oggi proseguirà con il nostro processo molto soddisfacente di collaborazione tra parlamenti nazionali e Parlamento europeo. In questo settore dell'immigrazione e dell'asilo, che pur rafforzando la nostra cooperazione interistituzionale rispetta anche le nostre rispettive competenze. E la collaborazione fra Parlamento europeo e Parlamenti nazionali è decisiva per offrire le risposte adeguate affinché una nuova politica comune sull'immigrazione e l'asilo consenta ai nostri Stati membri, ai nostri territori, alle nostre regioni, di affrontare una delle grandi sfide del nostro tempo. Permettetemi di concludere ringraziandovi nuovamente per la vostra partecipazione a questa riunione e augurandovi un buon svolgimento dei lavori e un buon lavoro nei panel che si terranno oggi. Vi ringrazio, passo la parola al mio caro amico Presidente Eduardo Ferro Rodriguez, Presidente dell'Assemblea della Repubblica Portoghese. Grazie a tutti per l'attenzione.
Signor Presidente del Parlamento Europeo, David Sassoli, também o cumprimento daqui de Lisboa e do Parlamento Português. Caros presidentes da Assembleia Nacional da Eslovénia, Igor Zorčič, e do Bundestag, Wolfgang Schäuble, caras e caros colegas, minhas senhoras e meus senhores, o tema que nos junta hoje é da maior pertinência, vai ao âmago do que somos como União Europeia, do que estipula o artigo 2º do Tratado de Lisboa, e de como nos posicionamos e queremos ser vistos pela comunidade internacional. Nesse sentido, a comunicação da Comissão ao Conselho sobre um novo Pacto para as Migrações e o Asilo, de setembro de 2020, é um excelente documento de partida, sendo da maior importância que a União Europeia chegue a um consenso na matéria. Como bem lembrou o Alto Comissário das Nações Unidas para os Refugiados, Filipe Grandi, o Pacto oferece uma oportunidade à Europa de mostrar que pode fazer prevalecer o direito fundamental ao asilo, cooperando em políticas pragmáticas de identificação dos necessitados de proteção internacional e demonstra de responsabilidade com eles. É por conseguinte natural a atenção que a presidência portuguesa tem dado à temática das migrações e do asilo. Lembro as reuniões ministeriais realizadas e a conferência ministerial de 11 de maio sobre a gestão de fluxos migratórios. O tema estará, aliás, na agenda do Conselho Europeu deste mês, onde se antecipa, seja dada luz verde ao Blue Card, para profissionais qualificados. Sendo a questão das migrações uma temática de vocação transversal, a pandemia de Covid-19, também ela transversal, tem tido repercussão direta na primeira e muito em particular na sua dimensão externa. É bom lembrar como estes anos de pandemia têm entrado em conflito com um princípio básico da União Europeia, a liberdade de circulação de pessoas, com prejuízo do mercado único, mas também, por exemplo, afetando gravemente a mobilidade dos estudantes do ensino superior, como aponta um estudo recente do Erasmus. As restrições de circulação não têm ocorrido apenas entre Estados-membros, mas têm sucedido igualmente dentro das respectivas fronteiras nacionais. Inevitavelmente, estas limitações alargaram-se às fronteiras externas da União, que são também fronteiras nacionais. A localização geográfica de alguns Estados-membros resulta em que haja parceiros mais expostos e que são quase quotidianamente confrontados com os dramas humanitários da migração e do asilo. a Frontex e as outras agências europeias têm sabido ter uma ação de primeira linha nesse sentido, sempre insuficiente, obviamente. É imperioso que o seja não apenas numa base securitária, mas no respeito pelos valores da União Europeia, no respeito pelo direito internacional. A pandemia agravou aspectos das migrações e asilo e do seu impacto nas nossas sociedades, que não podemos descurar. As frágeis condições sanitárias dos campos de refugiados, o contributo dos migrantes para a nossa vida coletiva, quantos dos nossos serviços públicos e privados sentiram a falta de mão de obra migrante. No passado mês de janeiro, a Comissão Europeia publicou o relatório de uma consulta sobre o futuro da migração legal. Nele está claro que nos próximos anos teremos falta de mão de obra em certas ocupações com a concomitante necessidade de recrutamento em países terceiros. Como bem afirmou Filipe Grandi, a mobilidade humana bem gerida é auxiliar da recuperação da pandemia de Covid-19. E que dizer do impacto da pandemia de Covid-19 nos países em desenvolvimento? A falta continuada no acesso às vacinas. E lembro aqui a advertência feita pelo secretário-geral das Nações Unidas, António Guterres, para o facto de ninguém estar seguro enquanto não estivermos todos seguros. A queda do produto interno bruto, das remessas de imigrantes e o aumento da pobreza, segundo as Nações Unidas, em 2020 terão sido mais 14 milhões os africanos em condições de pobreza extrema, com rendimentos diários inferiores a 1,95 dólares. O que nos remete para a importância da abordagem global, coerente, pela União Europeia, da dimensão externa das migrações. Nela se incluem as parcerias abrangentes, específicas, equilibradas e mutuamente benéficas com os países de origem e os países de trânsito, a ajuda ao desenvolvimento, a política de vistos, o investimento estrangeiro e o comércio. Em suma, há que agir com responsabilidade, diálogo e solidariedade, e há que agir com rapidez. É muito o que esta conferência interparlamentar tem para debater. Deixo-vos, pois, os meus votos de pleno sucesso, os votos do Parlamento Português, de pleno sucesso, de modo a darmos o nosso contributo para o delineamento de perspectivas para o futuro desta área prioritária para a União e os seus Estados-membros. Muito obrigado.
A lei, Presidente, buongiorno.
Spoštovani predsednik Evropskega parlamenta, gospod Sassoli, spoštovani predsednik parlamenta Portugalske republike, gospod Rodriguez, spoštovani predsednik Bundestaga, gospod Schäuble, spoštovani podpredsednik Evropske komisije, gospod Šinas, cenjeni kolegi, parlamentarke in parlamentarci, gospe in gospodje. Veseli me, da vas lahko pozdravim na današnji že drugi medparlamentarni konferenci na visokem nivoju o migracijah in azilni politiki, ki tokrat poteka v okviru portugalskega predsedstva. Kot sem izpostavil že novembra, na prvi konferenci je pandemija COVID-19 otežila reševanje vprašanj migracije in azila, obenem pa razkrila kritične točke sistema Unije za naslavljanje vprašanja migracij v tem pandemičnem času. Zato me veseli, da je prvi panel današnje konference namenjen prav temu vprašanju. Migracijski tokovi so bili v zadnjih 15 mesecih sicer bistveno manjši kot leto poprej, predvsem zaradi omejitev gibanja in potovanj ter zaprtja meja v boju proti širitvi novega koronavirusa. Toda negotovost in ranljivost beguncev ter migrantov sta se v tem času pravzaprav povečali. običajnim tveganjem, ki so jim migranti izpostavljeni na svojih poteh, se je pridružilo še povečano zdravstveno tveganje. Okrepile pa so se tudi nove oblike rasizma in izključevanja. Naj ob tem povem, da tudi Slovenija namenja posebno pozornost zaščiti beguncev in prosilcev za mednarodno zaščito pred okužbo s koronavirusom. Zagotovljeno jim je informiranje o preventivnih ukrepih in samozaščiti v njim razumljivem jeziku, delo in življenje v azilnem domu ter integracijskih hišah je ustrezno organizirano, ne nazadnje pa Slovenija zagotavlja enak dostop do cepljenja za vse, tudi za begunce. Nikakor ne moremo mimo dejstva, da je pandemija še dodatno poslabšala ekonomske in politične nestabilnosti v mnogih državah izvora, kar bo v prihodnje verjetno predstavljalo dodaten spodbujevalni faktor za nadaljne migracije. Zato je še toliko bolj pomembno, da velik del pozornosti namenimo prav zunanji razsežnosti migracij. V tej luči Slovenija podpira celovit in uravnotežen pristop k migracijam, ki temelji na vzajemnih partnerstvih, pomeri in okrepljenem sodelovanju z državami izvora, tranzita in cilja na vseh področjih. Zavedamo se namreč, da je za zmanjševanje ilegalnih migracij pomembno migracijsko politiko umestiti v širši kontekst odnosov s tretjimi državami, ki bo vključeval tudi krepitev gospodarskega sodelovanja in ustvarjanje novih delovnih mest. Le s takšnim pristopom namreč si lahko obetamo trajnostnega gospodarskega razvoja in varnosti in stabilnosti držav izvora. Veseli me torej, da je ravno v času portugalskega predsedovanja prišlo do pomembnega premika in začetku pogovora s tretjimi državami. 23. septembra lani je Evropska komisija objavila predlog kompleksnega svežnja pakta o migracijah in azilu. Od tedaj je minilo že več kot 8 mesecev in sam bi si iskreno povedano želel, da bi bilo v pogajanjih doseženega več napredka. Dogodki zadnjih dni nas vendarle lahko navdajo s previdnim optimizmom. Naj ob tem poudarim, da si bo prihajajoče slovensko predsedovanje prizadevalo za konkreten napredek v pogajanjih glede pakta o migracijah in azilu. Zavedamo se namreč, da gre za eno najzahtevnejših vprašanj, s katerim se sooča Unija, in da bodo pogajanja zaradi aktualnosti problematike in trenutnega deadlocka dolgotrajna in kompleksna. Med vprašanji, ki bo naše predsedovanje naslovilo, lahko tako izpostavim celostno upravljanje z migracijami, vrnitev k normalnemu delovanju šengenskega območja in varovanje zunanjih meja ter seveda Zahodni Balkan. Slednje je za našo državo že sicer politična in strateška prioriteta, prav tako pa je tudi z vidika migracij dobro in okrepljeno sodelovanje z državami te regije ključnega pomena. Spoštovani, skorajšnje slovensko predsedstvo bo nadaljevalo s prakso organiziranja medparlamentarne konference na visokem nivoju o migracijah in azilni politiki. Ob tem pa upamo, da bo zadevna konferenca postala del parlamentarne dimenzije vsakokratnega predsedovanja. Migracije so, kot je bilo tudi danes že povedano, postale naša vsakdanjost in prav verjetno je, da nas bo ta problematika spremljala še dolga leta v prihodnje, zato je nujno, da prilagodimo naše politike in način našega skupnega delovanja. Ob tem pa se moramo zavedati, da samim sprejetjem pakta o migracijah in azilu, do katerega upamo, da bo vendarle prišlo v doglednem času, naše delo še zdaleč ne bo končano. Potrebno bo zagotoviti in skrbno spremljati njegovo izvajanje tudi v praksi, kar pa bo nedvomno prineslo nove in nove izzive. Dovolite mi, da vas ob tej priložnosti povabim na prihodnjo konferenco, ki jo bo Državni zbor Republike Slovenije v soorganizaciji z Evropskim parlamentom organiziral predvidoma novembra. Potrudili se bomo, da bo naš dogodek naslovil ključne in aktualne teme, ter da bo medparlamentarna konferenca na visokem nivoju o migracijah in azilni politiki še naprej nudila platformo za sistematično spremljanje vprašanja migracij na najvišji parlamentarni ravni. Hvala za pozornost.
Grazie al presidente Zorčič. Adesso la parola al presidente Wolfgang Schäuble, presidente del Bundestag. Prego, presidente, lei la parola. Buongiorno.
Liebe Kolleginnen und Kollegen, ich grüße Sie aus Berlin, aus dem Deutschen Bundestag. Bei seinem Besuch im Dezember vergangenen Jahres, einen Monat nach der ersten interparlamentarischen Konferenz zu Migration und Asyl in Europa, hat der Generalsekretär der Vereinten Nationen, Antonio Guterres, gesagt: Die Pandemie hat tiefe Bruchlinien offengelegt. Ungleichheiten, Ungerechtigkeit, unzureichende soziale Sicherheit. Überall haben die Schwächsten am meisten zu leiden. Ich danke den portugiesischen und den slowenischen Kollegen, dass sie die Initiative zum parlamentarischen Austausch in diesen so zentralen Herausforderungen für Europa und unser Selbstverständnis aufgreifen und unter ihren Präsidentschaften fortsetzen. Nach der Flüchtlingskrise 2015 bedeutet Covid-19 für uns alle ein, wie ich damals gesagt habe, weiteres Rendezvous mit der Globalisierung. Die Gesundheitskrise mit ihren weitreichenden Auswirkungen in alle Lebensbereiche verschärft die weltweiten politischen und sozialen Konflikte. Sie bedroht Entwicklungsfortschritte und sie destabilisiert schwache Volkswirtschaften. Nicht zuletzt, weil die Geldtransfers von Millionen von Arbeitsmigranten ausbleiben. Übrigens weltweit die Gefahr der Zunahme von Hungersnöten auch sich erheblich verschärft. Man muss sich nur die steigenden Weltmarktpreise für Agrarmittel anschauen. Und wo Perspektivlosigkeit wächst, steigt eben auch der Migrationsdruck. Die Zahl der Menschen, die den Weg nach Europa suchen, nimmt wieder zu. Auf der Balkanroute, über das Mittelmeer, durch die Sahelzone. Und das Virus hat ja die katastrophalen Bedingungen noch verschlechtert, denen Menschen ohne dies auf der Flucht und leider auch in den Lagern ausgesetzt sind. Angesichts dieser Herausforderung bleibt das, was bislang erreicht wurde, viel zu weit hinter dem zurück, was notwendig ist. Immerhin, zur Europäischen Asylagentur gab es zuletzt positive Signale. Das Migrations- und Asylpaket, über das wir im November gesprochen haben, ist längst überfällig. Europa braucht einen abgestimmten Umgang mit der Zuwanderung, ein europäisches Asylrecht mit einheitlichen Standards, mit funktionierenden Anerkennungs- und Verteilungsverfahren. Aber wir blockieren uns immer wieder gegenseitig, lassen oft an den europäischen Außengrenzen Mitgliedstaaten mit den Schwierigkeiten allein, obwohl wir wissen, auf Dauer fällt es auf Europa als Ganzes zurück, wenn wir in der Asyl- und Migrationspolitik keine gemeinschaftlichen Lösungen finden. Wir stehen dabei vor einem Dilemma. Wir dürfen vor dem Leid und dem Sterben auf den Flüchtlingsrouten nicht die Augen verschließen, wenn wir es ernst meinen mit unserem Selbstverständnis als Wertegemeinschaft. Mit jedem gekenterten Boot, mit jedem verlorenen Menschenleben verliert die Europäische Union an Glaubwürdigkeit. Aber wir dürfen eben auch keine falschen Anreize für den Weg nach Europa schaffen. Wir müssen die kriminellen und menschenverachtenden Aktivitäten von Schleppern, Schmugglern und Milizen eindämmen, um Flüchtende und Migranten vor Gewalt und Ausbeutung zu schützen. Und wir müssen sicherstellen, dass Menschen, die keine Chance auf einen legalen Aufenthalt in der EU haben, schnell und konsequent in ihre Herkunftsregion zurückgeführt werden. In vielen Transit- und Herkunftsregionen kommen wir dabei übrigens nur weiter, wenn wir auch mit unseren Regimen kooperieren, die nicht unseren demokratischen Standards entsprechen. Wir haben in dieser Zusammenarbeit das höchstmögliche Maß an Rechtsstaatlichkeit und humanitärer Verantwortung sicherzustellen. Aber, liebe Kolleginnen und Kollegen, es bleiben moralische Kosten, die wir tragen müssen. Denn wir haben keine anderen Ansprechpartner. Angesichts der globalen Langzeitfolgen von Corona gilt umso mehr, dass wir Europäer gefordert sind, unsere Nachbarregion zu stabilisieren, ihre ökonomische und ökologische Entwicklung zu unterstützen, Demokratie und Rechtsstaatlichkeit zu fördern. Die von der Kommission vorgeschlagenen Migrationspartnerschaften können dabei helfen, wenn es gelingt, sie überzeugend umzusetzen. Und da liegt es wesentlich auch an uns, den nationalen Parlamenten, unsere Regierungen anzutreiben. Wir haben unseren Beitrag dazu zu leisten, endlich zu mehr Gemeinsamkeit in dieser für die Zukunft der Europäischen Union so zentralen Frage zu kommen. Ich hoffe, dass uns unser heutiger Austausch auf diesem Weg voranbringt. Und ich wünsche in diesem Sinne der Konferenz einen guten Verlauf.
Bene, grazie Presidente Schäuble. Adesso il discorso di apertura. Al commissario, la parola al commissario Margheritis Schinas, vicepresidente della Commissione europea per la promozione dello stile europeo. Prego, vicepresidente.
Grazie, caro Presidente Sassoli, dear Presidents Ferro Rodriguez, dear President Zorzic, Dr. Schäuble. It's a great honor and a pleasure to join you today for this very timely discussion on the EU migration and asylum policy, and in particular the external dimension of our migration policies. Let me start by saying that this is the moment probably to bring national parliaments closer at the heart of the discussion. For a long time, the discussion on migration policies in Europe has always been considered as something that is limited to the Brussels bubble and the Brussels community. I think this is an issue per se that transcends the confines of the European institutions. It requires a major paradigm shift, and national parliaments and members of national parliaments are an essential part of this debate. So I'm particularly happy and delighted that we can have this discussion at the interparliamentary dimension it merits. If there is one thing that we learned in Europe since 2015-16 refugee crisis, is, as some of the previous speakers raised, is that migration and asylum is not a question that any member state can answer alone. Effective solutions require collective European action, shared objectives, a communality of understanding. And these shared objectives should go beyond the very often politically toxic debate we are witnessing in certain parts of Europe, which is short-sighted, based on isolationist rhetoric, which confines migration policy to a binary choice of us against them, and seeks to perpetuate the absence of a common, well-functioning, holistic and cohesive European policy. The second thing we found out is that when we designed the future of the European asylum and migration policies, the external dimension cannot be an accessory, cannot be an afterthought. It has to be integrally interwoven at the heart of our overall thinking. And it's not a coincidence that we are discussing this morning, and it's not a coincidence that next week the leaders of the European Union in the upcoming European Council will have exactly the same discussion. Let me start with our pact for the migration and asylum, which we presented last September. And let me start by saying that I truly appreciate the almost universal praise that we are getting on the starting point for a new European migration and asylum policy as described in the pact. This is the first time that we put on the table a comprehensive, holistic, seamless circuit type of policy, where everything connects to everything else, from better management of our external borders to fair and effective procedures internally in the European Union and a significantly reinforced external dimension. The pact is the only way out of the current problem. But we need to be very clear on how this external dimension of the pact will be structured, because this is the first floor of the three-story building that we want to construct, the second floor being borders and the third solidarity. But we need to build this first floor of external dimension sufficiently resilient so that we can withhold the whole architecture. That's why we want to put centrally in this first floor this issue of balanced and mutually beneficial partnerships tailor-made to each partner's country-specific needs, especially of countries of origin and transit of migratory flows. With these partnerships, we want to help them make better lives for their people so that they can stay and prosper in their home countries instead of putting their lives in the hands of the smugglers in the Mediterranean, in the Aegean, or in the Atlantic. We also want to support them in strengthening their migration and asylum capacities, including through enhanced support to border management and counter migrant smuggling actions. We want to help them to address the root causes of irregular migration, not only by investment and money, but by creating an ecosystem of incentives that the European Union is capable of, from visas to trade preferences, and yes, why not Erasmus scholarships, so that we have a comprehensive offer. We want to help them help us by stepping up return, readmission, and reintegration arrangements. And yes, President Sassoli said it very clearly, we want to help them to develop legal migration possibilities to the European Union. You may ask, why do you expect these new ideas to take off in practice this time when we failed to do it in the past? What has changed would be the legitimate question. Let me answer this by saying a lot has changed since 2015, 2016. First, for the first time, there is a clear evolution in the stance and the understanding of international partners. They do start to realize that migration has become an issue of central importance to our union, and many of them, particularly countries in our neighborhood, are often simultaneously themselves countries of origin, transit, and destination, and therefore they face similar challenges to those that we face. In other words, it is also to their own interest to prioritize sustainable solutions to migration and asylum management. The second thing that has changed is that contrary to 2015-16, when we had to strive to retrofit migration into our programs and find the money to be able to cope, by the way, with the enormous and very generous help of the European Parliament at the time, this time is different, because this time we're planning our asylum policies at the start of a new EU budgetary cycle. So our external financing instruments have been designed to factor in migration considerations from the outset, and we intend to make a more flexible and strategic use of the programming of our external funding to achieve our objectives. The new Neighborhood Development and International Cooperation Instrument, also known by the unpronounceable abbreviation NDC, was adopted both by Parliament and the Council. And it includes for the first time a 10% target over 8 billion euros specifically dedicated to migration. And finally, this time is different because we now have a series of new innovating tools at our disposal that can operationally support the external dimension of the new pact. And these include the reinforced role of our new EU agencies, EASO for asylum and Frontex for border management, a more effective framework for returns to ensure that procedures are respected and work in practice. We also have the annual assessment of third countries' cooperation on readmission under the new visa code, which gives us an opportunity to take stock, discuss with partners, and propose concrete visa measures to incentivize cooperation. And we have also support to the reintegration of returnees as set out in our recently adopted strategy for voluntary returns. As far as legal migration arrangement is concerned, we have just launched last Friday a strategic discussion on talent partnerships between high-level representatives of member states and stakeholders. Our objective there is to significantly scale up the very successful pilot projects we are running now, which have indeed shown that the EU can successfully support member states in implementing legal migration schemes for the mutual benefit of partner countries, migrant workers, and employers. I'm highly encouraged that this new understanding of how important the external dimension of migration policy is shaping is now becoming a reality. For the first time after 6 years, we had a joint meeting of EU foreign and home affairs ministers together on the 15th of March under the Portuguese presidency. And that was a fantastic opportunity to reconfirm that Team Europe is playing together with the same objective, with the same strategic priority, and with the same mindset. Dear friends, I know that the pandemic will inevitably shape our migration policies, and I know there is a panel that will discuss this later in more detail. What I would like to say is that as we start to get out of this global health challenge and we start to gradually lift the restrictions, we need to make sure that our migration systems are ready fit to handle what comes next. And it's not a secret that the decline of socioeconomic conditions in third countries, the standstill in tourism, has exacerbated many of the trends that underlie the emergence of migration flows. So we need to be able to cope, and we need to be able to prepare. And this time, we need to have the architects doing their job before the firefighters, as was the case 5 and 6 years ago. Let me conclude to say that it would be naive to build an EU migration and asylum policy on the assumption of a stable geopolitical environment around us. This will not happen. The recent events at the border of Ceuta and the past events, the border with Turkey in Evros, were a stark reminder that Europe cannot afford to be complacent or unprepared. Reaching an agreement on the new Pact for Migration and Asylum as soon as possible should be a priority of the European Union and should be a priority across party lines and across national lines. We all know that the absence of a robust, functioning single system for migration and asylum remains the biggest pull factor for irregular arrivals. The absence of an agreement is feeding the business model of the smugglers and taking a heavy toll on human lives. The European Union has the means, the tools, and the collective clout to put in place a system that works, a system that works in practice, and to build partnerships for the benefit of Europe, of our country partners, of refugees and migrants alike. We do not need any more incidents like those in Ceuta or Evros to remind us. We do not need any more sunken boats and bodies washing ashore. We do not need any more reminders. We need to step up to the challenge, and the moment is now. Thank you.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Vice-Presidente da Comissão Europeia, Margaritis Schinas, a partir de Lisboa, da Assembleia da República de Portugal, declaro encerrada esta sessão de abertura. Segue-se imediatamente a primeira sessão sobre o impacto da pandemia na política de migração e asilo. Muito obrigado a todos pela vossa participação.
Ok. Colleagues, it's a big honor for me to co-chair this first session on the impact of COVID-19 pandemic on migration and asylum policies with my Portuguese counterpart, Mr. José Manuel Proença, Vice President of the Portuguese Assembly and Deputy Chair of the Committee on Constitutional Affairs, Rights, Freedoms and Guarantees. Let me also especially welcome the 58 members of 28 national parliaments and chambers of 22 member states who have registered for our session. And of course, I also like to welcome my fellow MEPs from the European Parliament. The session will be web streamed and it is interpreted in 8 languages, English, French, German, Italian, Portuguese, Slovenian, Spanish and Polish. I do think it is clear for everyone that the global pandemic has social, economic and political consequences. The impact on developing countries has come on top of already precarious challenges, and it will exacerbate existing tension and will likely also act as a push factor for socio-economic migration. It is against this background that today's session intends to discuss the impact of the pandemic on the economic and political stability of countries of origin and transit of migration, and how the European Union can assist the developing countries in addressing the root causes of migration or ease the burden on refugee-hosting countries. As discussed last November at the first high-level interparliamentary conference, migration is one of the major challenges facing the European Union. As Rapporteur on the Asylum and Migration Management Regulation, I realize the importance of a comprehensive approach to migration with a whole-the-root perspective. Migration occurs for underlying reasons, and we can address these causes. In this way, as Chair of the Development Committee, I am pleased that the EU is deeply committed to assist countries around the world to overcome challenges. The COVAX mechanism, making vaccination available to developing countries, and the Global Europe Instrument, reaffirming European actions to promote good governance, sustainable development, and economic growth, are just two examples. More
can of course be done, and it will be important to engage with African countries in the context with the Rabat and Khartoum processes and through regional African organization. Before moving on to the debate, I will now briefly pass the floor to my co-chair for his introductory remarks. Please, Mr. Pureza.
Well, thank you, Thomas Tobe, dear colleague. Good morning to you and to all other distinguished participants in this first session of our meeting. Let me very briefly just emphasize the obvious. COVID-19 pandemics has added severe complexity to the extremely problematic file of adequate policies for migration fluxes. On one side, the fragility of people on the move, escaping from conflicts, poverty, and persecution, exposes those persons to an added danger of contagion and to the emergence of disease outbreaks. On the other side, the dramatic impact of COVID on economic dynamics deepen inequalities both at the global and at the regional and national levels. The asymmetries between the global north and the global south, as well as the gap between the richest and the poorest segments of our societies, have been boosted in terms of resilience and in terms of capacity of responding to the destructive results of pandemics. COVID is having a direct effect in increasing poverty, in reducing job opportunities for the less qualified majority, and in challenging the scope of welfare policies. This is an obvious major challenge for Europe. If we want to stay loyal to the primacy of human rights and social cohesion, then we clearly must assume that this is not the time to build walls against those that search for safety and protection in Europe. Improving safe routes for migrants and refugees, reinforcing inclusion policies, enlarging concrete solidarity with African, Latin American, and Southern Asian countries should be at the heart of the EU's approach to the complexity of migration policies in times of pandemics. Let me remind Pope Francis' crystal clear words in Fratelli Tutti. No one is saved alone. We can only be saved together. I am convinced that this session will give all of us clues to put this strong message into concrete policies. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pureza. Allow me to introduce now our two high-level guest speakers, Antonio Vitorino, Director General of the International Organization for Migration, and Branko Grims, Chair of the Committee on the Interior, Public Administration, and Local Self-Government at Slovenian Parliament. Mr. Vitorino, Mr. Grims, thank you for your participation today. It is a pleasure to have you with us, and we are, of course, are very interested to listen to your intervention. And we will start with Antonio Vitorino. The floor is yours for a maximum of 10 minutes, please.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Distinguished participants and colleagues, it is a pleasure to be with you today. In my capacity as Director General of the International Organization for Migration, and if you allow me, recalling that I have been in the past member of the Portuguese Parliament, member of the European Parliament, and also member of the European Commission. As countries across Europe slowly emerge from the third wave of the pandemic, we have rediscovered our respect for the ability to cross borders. We have been cut off from international travel, often for the first time in our entire lives. The restrictions imposed have revealed some core fragilities within national immigration systems, not least our dependence on in-person and on-paper processes. Globally, the pandemic has triggered an unprecedented health, humanitarian, social-economic, and human rights crisis with many implications for migrants. Health impacts, together with a rise in extreme poverty, political instability, conflict, disasters, and food insecurity, have driven humanitarian needs to new levels and further intensified ongoing humanitarian crisis. At the end of last year, over 235 million people were in need of humanitarian assistance and protection. If left unaddressed, this will have long-term impacts on fragility, risks of displacement, and human suffering, and spillover effects in regions dealing with multiple challenges, as President Sassol recalled, the Sahel, with climate impacts having a clear impact. The imposition of border restrictions and travel bans has left a significant number of migrants stranded, including seasonal workers, temporary residence workers, international students, seafarers, and many others. Many more were forced to return to their own countries, unable to access employment due to lockdowns and other restrictions, struggling to provide for themselves and their families. Limitations to international trade and mobility are deepening the uneven economic impacts of the pandemic, with migrants, displaced persons and affected communities particularly impacted by global job losses and increasing inequality, and yes, almost 100 million people supposed to go back to extreme poverty. At the same time, the pandemic has also shown the importance of migrant workers as an essential part of the workforce in many sectors such as health and agriculture. And throughout the pandemic, migrants continue to send remittances back to families and communities to support those most deeply affected by global lockdowns. Yes, $540 billion have been sent back in 2020 to the countries of origin, a decline of 1.6% compared to 2019, and an overall amount still superior to the sum of foreign direct assistance and foreign direct investment. Migration remains deeply interconnected to sustainable development. Without incorporating migrants and migration in all planning and programming, we cannot recover from COVID-19 and achieve the Agenda 2030 goals. For Europe, the sharper edges of the pandemic are fortunately passing. But for much of the rest of the world, both the health and social economic effects will unfortunately linger. We must invest deeply in recovery across the world, including through support to reintegrate returning migrants, with reintegration being an important tool for development in countries of origin, and by supporting inter-regional mobility in other parts of the world. Critical to this, let's be very clear, in the short run, is the rollout of vaccination programming on a global level. I welcome very much the G7 commitment to donating 1 billion vaccines to poorer countries around the world, though more is needed and, above all, faster. Economic recovery is intrinsically linked to vaccination rollout. Also critical is the need to include migrants, displaced populations, refugees, and other people on the move into global vaccination efforts. IOM's own surveys across over 160 countries show that migrants' access to vaccination, both on paper as well as in practice, is impeded in at least 53 countries, a situation which is exacerbated for those who are in irregular legal status. This is not only critical to ensure public health and reduce inequality, but also to empower migrant contributions to the pandemic response. As European governments turn to the essential task of distributing vaccines to less developed regions, we must also work to reduce barriers to access for the most vulnerable and increase infrastructure capacity across developing country health systems. At the same time, IOM is working with COVAX and on the ground to overcome information barriers on vaccination and bring vaccines not just to the capitals of the countries, but also to the arms of the beneficiaries. Indeed, we risk creating a new asymmetry across the world as countries find themselves on vastly different paths to recovery, and millions are excluded from the international system of travel based on their vaccination status and ability to meet other travel requirements. The European Union is a global leader in coordinated border management and has gained significant experience over the last year. There is an opportunity right now to ensure that all partners, your partners and the rest of the world, can benefit from your expertise, which requires capacity building, investing in infrastructure, and training and skilling border guards. And I hope that the NDC program will factor in. Restarting mobility in a predictable way will also be essential precondition to stable and regular migration, both to Europe and within regions beyond Europe, notably in Africa. And let me remind you that 80% of migratory flows in Africa are intra-African flows. And we remain alert to the sad reality that without safe means of travel, would-be migrants and displaced population may be forced to turn to criminal networks to cross borders clandestinely, endangering themselves and undermining the public health of the broader community. I want to subscribe President Sassoli's appeal about the need of a search and rescue effort EU-led operation in the Mediterranean. And the figures are frightening. IOM registers 677 deaths in Central Mediterranean route in 2021 from 1st of January to the end of April, which compares to 221 deaths in 2020, almost three times more. Colleagues, I think that in the past year, several countries across Asia have seen declines in their population, which has not been seen for decades, due in part to strict pandemic border rules, while in Europe, in countries that face demographic challenges, population growth has further stagnated due to higher deaths and lower immigration. The past year has reinforced the need for reinforced solidarity at all levels and the need to redouble support to third countries to address increasing health, humanitarian, and development concerns, and reignite global mobility. I'm counting on the engagement of the national parliaments and of the European Parliament to go ahead with the Pact on Asylum and Migration and address these overall challenges for the internal European Union, for the external dimension of the European Union. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Vitorino. I now give the floor to Branko Grims for a maximum of 10 minutes. Please, Mr. Grims.
Hvala za besedo. Vsem prav lep pozdrav, spoštovani gospe, spoštovani gospodje. Pozdrav iz slovenskega parlamenta, iz države, ki bo v naslednjega pol leta vodila celotno Evropsko unijo. Zagotavljam vam, da bo naše prvo vodilo odgovornost do Evrope, do Evropejk, do Evropejcev, do vseh držav, ki se stavljajo Evropsko unijo in bomo svoje delo uspešno opravili. Pandemija je pustila velike posledice. Pustila jih je tudi na migracijskih tokovih, ki so se v tem času nekoliko spremenili. To ni bila samo posledica pandemije, ampak tudi nekaterih drugih okoliščin. Danes se recimo balkanska pot nekoliko manj postavlja v ospredje, tukaj je upad okoli 60% glede na enako obdobje lani. Po drugi strani je bistveno povečan priliv na Malti pa v Italijo in znaša kar za 140% večje prilive glede na minulo obdobje. To seveda pomeni, da migracije, ilegalne migracije, govorimo danes, ostajajo izjemno pomembna, težka tema, s katero se bomo morali vsi soočiti v naslednjem obdobju. Vsega tega ne bi bilo, če bi se dosledno spoštovalo pravni red, če bi se dosledno spoštovalo Dublinski sporazum, vendar vsi vemo, da se ga žal tudi v evropskih institucijah in na mnogih vladah v zadnjih letih ni. Zaradi tega imamo danes problem, ki je dvojen. Eno je tisto, kar še prihaja in seveda v okoliščinah pandemije pomeni še dodatno težavo. In po drugi strani ne smemo pozabiti, da se je izkazalo, da v posameznih skupinah tudi več kot 98% tistih, ki pridejo kot prosilci za azil, do azila niso upravičeni. To seveda pomeni, da smo priče dejansko ne begunstvu, ampak masovni zlorabi pravice do azila na podzemlju celotne Evropske unije, do zlorabe prava, iz katere in to ta tok poganja, potem nekateri vlečejo političen in materialno korist. Korist, ki je utemeljena na človeškem trpljenju, je nemoralna in nedopustna. Zaradi tega je prvo in osnovno, kar je treba Evropi zagotoviti, dosledno spoštovanje prava in pravnega reda, veljavnega pravnega reda. V bodoče bo potrebno poskrbeti za remigracijo. Se pravi, če kje bi morala evropska solidarnost veljati pri remigracijah, pri vračanju tistih, ki niso upravičeni do azila v matične države. To zlasti za manjše države, ki nimajo vzvodov moči, predstavlja izjemen problem. V okoliščinah pandemije pa je to še dodatna, tudi zdravstvena, ne samo materialna težava. Na splošni ravni bo potrebno preučiti politike. Politike, ki so do zdaj na evropski ravni bile preveč usmerjene samo v sprejemanje in usmerjanje migrantskih tokov, masovnih migracij, vendar, če želi Evropa ostati Evropa, bo morala ravnati drugače. Evropa ne potrebuje prav nobenih masovnih migracij. Evropa potrebuje družinsko politiko, preusmerjanje denarja v družinsko politiko in za mlade družine, da se bodo evropski narodi, evropejci več odločali lažje za več otrok in potem težav z masovnimi migracijami ne bo več. Poleg tega je seveda potrebno zagotoviti enotno politiko pri zaščiti meja in evropske meje zaščititi dosledno. Nezdržno je, da se zunanje meje ne ščitijo v zadostni meri, znotraj Evrope, v šengenskem območju pa so v minulih letih zrasle nove meje, ki nas ločujejo, ko smo bili že prepričani, da smo uresničili tiste evropske sanje o Evropi brez meja, o Evropi narodov, ki med seboj sodelujejo in seveda skrbijo tudi za skupno politično, ekonomsko in varnostno prihodnost. In tukaj je treba podčrtati. Evropejke, evropejci imamo vso pravico živeti varno. To je treba zahtevati od vseh, ki delajo v institucijah Evropske unije in zato smo odgovorni vsi, ki delamo v institucijah posameznih držav. Zdaj, ko je pred nami pandemija, tretji val mineva, gre tukaj v prvi vrsti za precepljenost. Se pravi za vse preventivne ukrepe, ki so bili že sprejeti in ki morajo veljati za vse, ki se nahajajo na ozemlju posamezne države. Ne glede na to, a so vstopili legalno ali ilegalno, gre za to, da se pač stori tisto, kar je nujno potrebno, da se pandemija zaustavi. Od tod naprej pa bo potrebno poskrbeti za ukrepe, o katerih sem govoril. Se pravi, spremeniti politiko, se enkrat soočiti s tem, da od masovnih migracij imajo sicer nekateri politično in drugi tudi materialno korist in temu bo treba narediti na nek način konec. Tudi vsem tistim, ki potem služijo na račun ilegalnih migrantov ali pa z migranti, tudi pod krinko nevladnih organizacij in vsega, kar služi na trpljenju ljudi. Treba se zavedati, da te ilegalne migracije pomenijo trpljenje za tiste, ki prihajajo, tudi življenjsko tveganje in pomenijo negativne posledice, tudi kršitev človekovih pravic, če želite, tudi kršitev pravice do varnosti, do osebne integritete za Evropejke in Evropejce v celoti. In tukaj je ta odgovornost, da se enkrat že ukrepa, tega je bilo v minulem obdobju premalo in treba se bo enkrat za vselej soočiti z dejstvom, da je tu potreben konsenz. To posebej podčrtam. Nevzdržno je, da se vedno znova, ko gre za ta vprašanja, poskuša iz posameznih institucij ali pa iz posameznih držav pač uveljavljati neko pravico do preglasovanja in potem usiljevanje svoje ocene in svojih političnih prepričanj na celotni evropski ravni. Tako pač ne gre, to samo krepi tiste sile, ki Evropo trgajo na razen. Jaz sem prepričan, da je naš skupni cilj in mora biti naš skupni cilj, da Evropsko unijo ohranimo in jo še krepimo, da ohranimo njeno identiteto, da ohranimo identiteto njenih držav. In po drugi strani, da zagotovimo blaginjo vsem tistim, ki tu živijo, da z njim zagotovimo varnost in da zagotovimo enake in ustrezne pogoje, ampak na zakonit način tudi za vse tiste, ki prihajajo. Kdor to krši, bi za to moral odgovarjati. Politično, materialno in če je potrebno, v posameznih primerih in trdim, da bi bilo to potrebno tudi kazensko pravno. Ne samo, ko gre za organizatorje ilegalnih migracij, ampak za vse tiste, ki pri tem služijo na račun trpljenja ljudi. To pač ni tista Evropa, ki jo želimo. Evropa mora temeljiti na pravu, na pravičnosti, na odnosu, da se medsebojno spoštujemo, da se spoštujemo kot ljudje in da se spoštujemo kot narodi, kot države. In zaradi tega je tako pomembno, da se pri takem vprašanju, ki Evropo trga na razen, v nobenem primeru ne gre več na kakršnokoli usiljevanje ali prisiljevanje ali diktiranje. Kajti to krepi tiste, ki trgajo Evropo na razen. Če se ta proces ne ustavi, potem Evropska unija ne bo zdržala skupaj. Treba je iskati konsenz, treba si je vzeti čas, treba si je vzeti energijo in poiskati tiste stične točke, o katerih se bomo vsi strinjali. Da so to točke, na katerih velja nadaljevati skupno pot, da je to tista prava pot, ki zagotavlja varnost in blaginjo vsaki državljanki, vsakemu državljanu, katerekoli države članice Evropske unije. In seveda, da je to tista pot, ki zagotavlja spoštovanje človekovih pravic, brez izjem in dosledno vsem, ki se na ozemlju pač Evropske unije oziroma njenih članic v tem trenutku oziroma kadarkoli kasneje nahajajo. Če bomo poiskali ta konsenz, potem sem trdno prepričan, da smo storili največ, kar lahko storimo za Evropsko unijo kot celote, za vse Evropejke, za vse Evropejce, za vse evropske države in tudi za naslednje rodove. Zagotavljam vam, da v Sloveniji bomo storili vse, da storimo, da poiščemo to pot, da storimo ustrezne korake na poti iskanja konsenza in v tej smeri, hkrati seveda z zagotavljanjem varnosti in zaščite meja, bo šlo naše prizadevanje v času vodenja Evropske unije. Kar se tiče pandemije, se zavedamo, da je zdaj tretji val za nami. Trdno smo prepričani, da je pandemija počasi vendarle premagana, ostale pa bodo problematike, o katerih govorimo, od katerih je odvisen obstoj Evropske unije, od katerih je odvisen nadaljni napredek in seveda ne samo Evropske unije kot celote, ampak tudi posameznih držav in vseh narodov, ki jo sestavljajo. Ti narodi smo bogatstvo Evropske unije, treba je storiti vse, da se ohrani njihova identiteta in da se zagotovi varnost in pač ustrezna blaginja vsakomur, ki živi v članicah Evropske unije. S tem ciljem, ki ga postavljamo na prvo mesto, to je gospodarska uspešnost, ob seveda zagotavljanju varnosti, sem prepričan, da bo Slovenija dobro in celo odlično opravila vodenje Evropske unije in vam zagotavljam, da bomo storili vse, da se čez pol leta zagotovi vse tisto, kar danes govorimo. Vas lepo pozdravljam iz Slovenskega parlamenta in želim vsem vam in celotni Evropski uniji in seveda vsem državam in narodom, ki so člani Evropske unije, vso srečo in še naprej.
Thank you, Mr. Grimes, and let me also thank you and also Mr. Vitorino that you have agreed to stay on a bit longer since we are running a bit late. But we should go on now with the debate with the members of the national parliaments and the members of the European Parliament. And I would firstly like then to pass the floor to Zoltán Teszely from the Hungarian National Assembly. You have the floor for 1 minute and 30 seconds.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak here. And first of all, I'd like to thank Branko Grimes for his introduction, with which I can fully agree. In 2016, our experience was that 764,000 migrants targeted Europe via the South Balkans route. Close to these migrants actually proceeded through Hungary.
I'm sorry, we don't have a camera. Is it possible if you can switch on the camera so we can see you, so we can have a translation? So is it possible to turn on the camera, please? Then I will give you the floor again. We'll try to give the floor again to Zoltán Teszely, and hopefully we can also have a camera working. We move on then. We go to the next one, and that is Gyota Polo from the Greece Hellenic Parliament.
Mr. Tobe, Mr. Gwentis, ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues. The sanitary fallout of the COVID-19 pandemic has disproportionately affected the vulnerable groups. This is due to a parallel pandemic of with social and economic fallout, which actually is exacerbating and undermining the cohesion of our societies, putting at great risk the health of those people that have low salaries, the unemployed, the people with disabilities, and the people who were seeking asylum. And we see that EU has in fact neglected to help the health of these people, and they have increased the risk for public health. Despite the position of WHO that refugees and migrants are vulnerable groups, very few countries such as Portugal have offered them direct access to the public health system. Most of them have either failed to do so or, like Greece did, actually restricted them to closed facility without healthcare personnel, without personal protection measures, and of course without vaccines. Furthermore, they have actually not allowed refugees to access education. In Greece, even though the general vaccination programme started out in January, the first vaccination in such reception centres took place just in the beginning of June, 6 months later. Until mid-April, the asylum seekers did not have the necessary social security number. But access to vaccination was not given either to the refugees who live in the community and who are within our cities. The decision of the Greek government to reduce the time of protecting recognised refugees from 6 months to one, and also the downgrading of the importance of the only social integration programme, has forced many of the homeless people to end up in the... most of has meant that a lot of them have been homeless and have been living on the street or have ended up in camps. So, ladies and gentlemen, we should not turn a blind eye, and we should see that these people have been marginalised.
Please conclude.
To direct the European financing towards a wall of immunity and not to walls of a fortress Europe. Thank you.
Thank you. We move on then to Janina Ochoska, DEVE, EPP.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am really honored to be a part of this very important event, which brings together all key stakeholders. All of us share a common goal to manage migration. To be precise, by manage, I mean not preventing migration, but finding better and effective solutions to make migration safer. Migration has always been there and will always be there. So we need to be more open and proactive, because migration is part of what makes our continent prosper and shape our identity. Our joint efforts will now be more than ever needed, as the COVID-19 pandemic triggered the worst global crisis since the end of the World War II, which concerns many societies, especially in less developing countries. Our efforts should be focused on ensuring a universal and fair access to COVID-19 vaccines and treatments by waiving the patents on COVID vaccines. It is our obligation, since international humanitarian law guarantees that everyone has a right to the highest attainable standard of health and obligates governments to adopt measures to provide medical care to those who need it without discrimination. So let's target refugees on an equal footing.
Please conclude.
Thank you.
Thank you. Then we go back again. I give the floor to Zoltán Teszely. Hopefully it will work now. Please.
Thank you very much again. First of all, I'd like to remind you that in 2015, when the migration crisis hit, via the southern migration route, we had 764,000 people arriving to Europe, with half proceeding through Hungary. We found that those who applied for asylum, well, only two had well-founded applications. So we took three measures to protect the population: mechanical protection on the borders, life protection through people on the border, and some legal measures. And that allowed us to push back migration to the level seen before 2015. We can say that illegal migration poses a threat to public security. And as discussed in the conference, in the emergency caused by the pandemic, it also carries a heightened health risk. So these days, we are saying that if across EU states the movement of the free movement is limited between EU countries, then we should also contemplate closing all migration channels and put them to a pause until the emergency caused by the pandemic is lifted. We have always said that we shouldn't be importing problems to Europe, but we should deliver help to where it's needed, and that's reflected by the help provided by the Hungary Helps Initiative.
Thank you. We move on then to Anna Maria Botella, Spanish Congress.
Buenos días, Buenos días desde España. Gracias por su invitación a esta segunda conferencia interparlamentaria de alto nivel. Como el alto representante, señor Borrell, ha dicho, de la pandemia COVID, es un acelerador de los desequilibrios existentes. Se han incrementado tensiones y desafíos con un impacto desestabilizador en los países de origen y tránsito de la migración hacia Europa. Y España está soportando una gran presión migratoria desde Marruecos, Argelia y países subsaharianos en las rutas del Mediterráneo Occidental y Atlántica hacia Europa, sobre todo en las Islas Canarias. La crisis en Ceuta el pasado mes de mayo es un hecho sin precedentes que da una idea del momento que vivimos. Y me remito a la resolución reciente del Parlamento Europeo del pasado 10 de junio. La presión migratoria, en nuestra opinión, requiere mantener desde la Unión Europea una ayuda regular, previsible y suficiente para la cooperación con países africanos de origen y tránsito, principalmente en el refuerzo de sus capacidades operativas de las fuerzas de seguridad encargadas de combatir la inmigración irregular. Como decía también el vicepresidente Esquinas, ni España ni ninguno de los países de la Unión Europea por sí solos tenemos capacidad suficiente para atender estas necesidades. Es un problema europeo que requiere una solución europea. Es prioritario y es urgente. Una consideración final sobre el retorno quería hacer, y es que el mayor incentivo es plantearlo en clave integral en el refuerzo de la dimensión exterior e incluir nuevas áreas de trabajo en la cooperación. Muchas gracias.
Thank you. And move on then to Sabrina De Carlo, Italian Chamber of Deputies.
Mrs. De Carlo, please press on the speak button at the bottom of your screen. Sorry, cannot hear you. Can you please refresh your page? Thank you.
Mi sentite?
Yes, we can hear you.
Perfetto. Grazie Presidente, onorevoli colleghi, io sono onorata e lieta di poter intervenire qui oggi in seno a questo importante dibattito. Ringrazio tutti coloro che sono intervenuti, in particolare il Presidente Sassoli, per aver toccato nel suo discorso aspetti fondamentali che come rappresentante del Parlamento italiano non posso che condividere ampiamente. La questione migratoria, come è noto, tocca molto da vicino al mio paese. In particolar modo la mia regione, il Friuli Venezia Giulia, porta d'accesso della rotta balcanica all'Italia, ma al contempo rappresenta un tema che ci chiede massima coesione a livello europeo. Le migrazioni hanno da sempre coinvolto il nostro continente, ma è evidente che ci troviamo ormai da anni di fronte a una vera e propria emergenza che ci richiede di pianificare un approccio strutturale e congiunto a livello comunitario per poter gestire al meglio gli attuali flussi migratori, che non solo sono risultati negli ultimi anni, compreso l'ultimo, in costante crescita, ma che sono destinati ad aumentare anche in futuro come diretta conseguenza la crisi pandemica da Covid-19, ma anche per motivi che vanno dalla crisi economica a quelle ambientali. L'attuale sistema comune europeo non risulta più da anni una strategia in linea con i nostri valori portanti, non solo perché fa ricadere gli oneri dell'accoglienza principalmente ai soli paesi di primo ingresso, ma anche perché non rispetta le reali aspettative di tutti coloro i quali mettono a rischio le proprie esistenze per raggiungere prospettive di vita migliori in Europa. Serve quindi uno sforzo comune, sono necessarie strategie a lungo termine che mirino in primo luogo alla condivisione dell'accoglienza anche sulla base di quote obbligatorie di ricollocamento, così come una migliore regolamentazione dell'ingresso legale in Europa per ragioni umanitarie, ma anche economiche o di studio, sia la quota più rilevante di arrivi. Il mio auspicio, dunque, concludo, è che si riguardi concretamente con una ragionevole rapidità in questa direzione, adottando un approccio globale e sostenibile che possa conciliare la giusta distribuzione di responsabilità tra gli Stati membri alla solidarietà che ci contraddistingue, trasformando, ove possibile, le difficoltà che ci prestiamo ad affrontare in opportunità e promuovendo anche a livello europeo un reale percorso di inclusione che garantisca rispetto del necessario equilibrio tra integrazione e sicurezza, anche dal punto di vista sanitario, e vi ringrazio.
Thank you. I will then pass the floor to Pietro Lorefis from the Italian Senate.
Sì. Sì, allora, grazie Presidente, onorevoli colleghi. Allora, abbiamo ascoltato con attenzione le parole del Presidente David Sassoli e anche degli altri intervenuti. È chiaro che la pandemia ha ulteriormente complicato il quadro internazionale e in relazione proprio al tema della migrazione e dei rapporti con gli stati confinanti, ha messo ulteriormente in evidenza quelle che erano già delle criticità, amplificandole. Io ho sentito diversi interventi anche con posizioni differenti. È stato fatto un richiamo chiaro a quello che è la riforma del cosiddetto Dublino, perciò quell'accordo internazionale che regola già la migrazione o l'asilo cosiddetto legale. Ma è chiaro che quando parliamo di rapporti tra gli Stati dell'Unione Europea, parliamo in generale di solidarietà. Da un lato si cita, solo enunciandola, la solidarietà, ma nei fatti poi ci sono alcuni Stati che continuano a fare dei distinguo, e io ritengo invece che dobbiamo concentrare l'azione, l'attenzione proprio nel rapporto di vera solidarietà tra gli Stati, perché non si può mantenere una pressione così alta soltanto su quegli stati come l'Italia e regioni come la Sicilia, la mia Sicilia, che hanno pressioni continue ed enormi di migranti. Considerate che nelle ultime 24 ore solo a Lampedusa sono arrivate oltre 1200 persone. Perciò l'invito è quello di usare ragionevolezza e usare il meglio di quello che è l'abilità diplomatica delle nostre nazioni. Grazie.
Thank you, and that concludes our first round of speakers. We will have a short second round as well, but I will now pass the floor. In total, we have about 5 minutes to answer the question. I will first give the floor to Mr. Vitorino, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for the contributions. In spite of the different views that have been expressed, I think that there is a clear message, and the message is that nobody can tackle the challenges of migration alone. And therefore, there is an urgent need to have progress in the political dialogue among the European Member States in terms of achieving results on the basis of the Pact on Asylum and Migration that has been put forward by the European Commission. Having said that, cooperation with the countries of origin and transit is fundamental. We have been working together with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, with the European Union and with the African Union in Libya. And this tripartite cooperation, EU-AU-UN, has been instrumental not just to protect the human dignity and the fundamental right of migrants, but also to guarantee the effectiveness of return and reintegration of the migrants that are not entitled to stay in the European Union in their countries of origin back home. What we see in the future, and I will conclude with this, what we see in the future is that as we are getting out of the pandemic, there will be an increase of migratory pressure. And we registered already 3 times more arrivals in Italy, as it has been mentioned, sudden flow of people in the Atlantic route towards the Canary Islands, and the degradation of the situation in the Sahel makes us think that that pressure will increase in the future. Therefore, the cooperation with the countries of origin and transit will be fundamental to guarantee that we protect the dignity of the migrants and at the same time that we promote regular pathways for migration. Thank you so much, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Vitorino. Now I give the floor to Mr. Grimes, please.
Poglejte, podatek, ki je bil zdaj naveden, je šokanten in da je prišlo v enem samem dnevu na samo eno lokacijo več kot 1000 ilegalnih migrantov. To je zdaj že skoraj na nivoju tistega toka iz leta 2015, če preračunate. In to seveda opozarja, in to mora biti jasno opozorilo vsem, da problem z ilegalnimi migracijami niti slučajno ni rešen ali da je vsaj na nek način postal manj pomemben, ampak je očitno pandemija povzročila zgolj to, da je bila manjša mobilnost tistih, ki prihajajo, zdaj pa, ko se sproščajo ukrepi, pa se povečujejo tudi migrantski tokovi. To seveda zahteva ustrezno reakcijo vseh držav Evropske unije, ki morajo storiti vse, da se končno že zaščiti zunanje meje. Treba je vedeti, da vsaka ilegalna migracija je nezakonita in da bi morale vse stvari znotraj Evropske unije potekati točno po predpisih, z upoštevanjem vsega, kar velja znotraj posameznih držav, kot tudi Dublinskega sporazuma in vseh drugih sporazumov, ki urejajo pač mednarodne odnose na ravni Evropske unije. V nadaljni koraki bodo morali iti v smer krepitve ustvarjanja takih razmer v državah, odkoder ti ljudje prihajajo, da ne bi bil več absoluten cilj priti v Evropsko unijo. Evropska unija pa bo, še enkrat poudarjam, morala očitno močno preučiti svojo politiko, kajti lahko sprejme migrante vsega sveta, pa zaradi tega ne bo nič bolje na tem svetu, samo Evrope ne bo več. Ne. Se pravi, potrebno bo ustvariti razmere, da se v Evropi ohrani pač identiteta evropskih narodov in evropskih držav, in po drugi strani, da se drugod po svetu, odkoder ti migranti prihajajo, ustvarijo razmere, ki bodo ljudem omogočale, da stanejo doma, da tam ustvarijo ustrezno ekonomijo, ustvarijo ustrezno blaginjo in da se na ta način enkrat ta problem razreši. Vse ostalo so začasne rešitve, ki so očitno zelo slabe, in prav ta povečanje, ki je izjemen, ne, ki ga je prej povedal spoštovani kolega, pač kaže na to, da se bodo v naslednjih dneh in tednih zagotovo ilegalne migracije še okrepile in Evropska unija je ponovno pred izzivom. In tukaj bi končal s tistim, kar sem povedal kot sporočilo že prej. Evropejci, Evropejke, imamo vso pravico živeti varno, nobena pravica nobenega tujca ne more biti nad to pravico in vsi, ki delajo v institucijah Evropske unije in ki delamo v institucijah posameznih držav, moramo temu cilju pač podrediti vse drugo. Nadaljnji koraki, ki bodo šli v smer krepitve sodelovanja, v smer večjega povezovanja znotraj Evropske unije, v smer iskanja konsenza pri tem vprašanju, pa so nujni in jih ponovno podčrtam, kajti če Evropska unija na tej točki ne bo dosegla kmalu ustreznega konsenza in to brez preglasovanja, brez kakršnega koli usiljevanja, potem se bodo stvari očitno pač ponovno zaostrile in bojim se do te mere, da Brexit, kakor je žalosten dogodek, ne bo ostal edini in osamljen. In to bo zelo slabo, če se to zgodi. Zaradi tega je pač potrebno storiti vse, da se v prvi vrsti zagotovi dosledno spoštovanje zakonitosti, zakonitosti na mejah, da se preprečijo tokovi ilegalnih migracij, da se znotraj Evrope remigrira in pošle nazaj vse, ki ne izpolnjujejo pogoje za azil, v bodoče pa, da se pomaga tam, kjer je pomoč edino smiselna, to pa je v državah, odkoder ti ljudje prihajajo. Samo to je trajna rešitev, v Evropi pa bo potrebno sredstva, ki se danes zapravljajo za ilegalne migracije, preusmeriti za pomoč družinam, za družinsko politiko, da se bodo Evropejke, Evropejci odločali za več otrok in potem tega problema z masovnimi migracijami sploh ne bo več. To je edina dobra rešitev, edina trajna rešitev in trdim, edina prava rešitev.
Thank you, Mr. Grimes. I will now pass the floor to my co-chair for the remainder of the debate, the second round of speakers. So, Mr. Pereza, please.
Well, thank you very much. I'll now give the floor to Pier Francesco Maggiorino from the European Parliament. Please go ahead.
Ma santo cielo.
Mr. Maggiorino, we were watching and listening to you. Can you please take the floor? Let's move to the next speaker.
Presidente,
back to Mr. Maggiorino.
Mi sente?
So please.
Presidente, mi sente?
Yes. Please go ahead, Mr. Maggiorino.
Okay, now I can.
Okay, so perhaps we can come back to Mr. Maggiorino later. Let's move to to Monica Bartos from the Hungarian National Assembly.
Thank you very much for the floor. Thank you, Mr. Greens, for your introductory thoughts. I'd like to raise three different aspects in the short time available, focusing on a very important message that the COVID-19 pandemic drew our attention to, which is security. The security that European citizens also long for, and the security that the people who leave their home countries also long for, and those who embark on an uncertain journey. The Hungarian government is trying to create this security in the spirit of solidarity when, for example, in the Republic of Cape Verde, it donated 1 million vaccines. As we emphasized, we are trying to help where it's needed, and one means of doing this is the Hungary Helps Program, because the Hungary Helps Program aims to create the right conditions in the countries of origin of migration to offer better prospects to the people born and living there, as it was also highlighted by the president in their introductory thoughts. The third security risk concerning migration occurs in the target countries. So those factors are not only present in the issuing and transit countries. In the countries of origin, there are also security aspects and risks, and we try and help with these as well. Because whether we look at countries of origin or transit countries, well, the Visegrad V4 countries are actually following cooperation policies and support policies that extend to all areas of potential help. So security is extremely important, and I'd very much like to ask my colleagues to keep that also in focus in the course of negotiations. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. We now have Mr. Duarte Marques from the Portuguese Parliament. Please go ahead.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Sr. Presidente, é um privilégio participar nesta conferência. Eu diria que a Europa está mais preparada, mas ainda hoje não está tão preparada como devia ou como desejava. Não estamos preparados para os aumentos constantes dos fluxos migratórios e muitas vezes não damos a valor certo àquilo que deve ser dado a esta matéria. Eu lamento desiludir-me, mas eu não estou de acordo com o Pacto para Asilo e Imigração. Percebo o pragmatismo ter de avançar, mas não posso aceitar, como europeísta convicto, que nem todos os Estados-membros sejam solidários a aceitar requerentes de asilo. E, em alguns casos particulares, se conhecendo a sua história migratória pelas condições socioeconómicas que têm, isso para mim é violar os princípios e valores da UE. Há algo que adoramos pronunciar, mas que nem sempre todos praticamos. É por isso que há coisas que não são negociáveis. Mas quem ouvia hoje o Presidente do Parlamento Europeu poderia ficar a pensar que não há uma intervenção comum no Mediterrâneo que, dia a dia, também salva milhares de pessoas que tentam chegar à Europa. E há um aspecto que já foi referido pelo Presidente do Parlamento Português e que, para mim, é talvez a maior consequência, ou uma das principais, e que tem sido pouco referidas, do Covid nas questões migratórias. É que tem a ver com a queda das remessas dos imigrantes, que são importantíssimas para o produto interno de muitos países, e bem fez Ferro Rodrigues ao referi-las no início da sua intervenção nesta conferência. Porque estes valores são ouro para muitas das famílias que nos países de origem destes migrantes sobrevivem e vivem de alguma forma melhor com o dinheiro que lhes faz chegar. O Conselho da Europa já em bom tempo apelou aos Estados-membros que baixassem as taxas para transferências e que se empenhassem na segurança destes mesmos valores a chegar aos países de origem destes migrantes. E gostava de terminar com esta reflexão também. Nós precisamos de migrantes, não há dúvidas. E não se fortalece a Europa com mais regularizações automáticas, mas sim através de serviços de migrações mais preparados, com mais formação, com mais recursos e que mais rapidamente respondam às pessoas, evitando assim que fiquem os migrantes nas mãos de redes criminosas que só vivem da ineficiência das máquinas administrativas e da falta de acordo entre os países europeus. A política migratória também não pode estar dissociada da política de cooperação para o desenvolvimento e esta não pode estar de costas voltadas ou em polos opostos da ajuda humanitária. É por isso que eu terminava dizendo que não basta de boa vontade, há que impor regras, mas sobretudo há que tornar os meios europeus mais eficientes, porque a Europa tem espaço para todos. O que nós não podemos continuar é a tentar proclamar uma coisa e a concretizar outra. Obrigado.
Well, thank you very much. Let's now try again Mr. Pier Francesco Maggiorino from the European Parliament. You have the floor.
Grazie Presidente, grazie, ci riprovo. E molto velocemente, io credo che sia importante, davvero significativa questa grande occasione che abbiamo tutti proprio per discutere insieme di un problema che deve essere affrontato nell'ottica della massima cooperazione e collaborazione. Dobbiamo dirci che finora così non è stato però e dobbiamo dirci che le risposte che stiamo immaginando, anche quelle riguardanti il patto per l'immigrazione, non sono sufficienti a sviluppare nuovi canali d'accesso legali all'Europa e a garantire salvaguardia dei diritti umani. Senza canali d'accesso legali e senza salvaguardia dei diritti umani, noi non saremo forti ed efficaci nella capacità di affrontare questo problema mettendo al centro il valore della persona. Se facciamo continuamente una competizione tra di noi su chi è invece più in grado di respingere o di esternalizzare le frontiere o di immaginare, come è stato anche esplicitamente detto, forme esterne all'Unione per contenere l'immigrazione, vivendola come un danno da ridurre, io credo che perdiamo una grande occasione e non fermiamo in alcun modo l'immigrazione irregolare, perché oggi la nostra attenzione, tutta legata alla logica dei rimpatri, non sta portando più benefici nel contrasto all'immigrazione irregolare. E questo è il punto politico di fondo rispetto a cui, tra l'altro, ci vuole una cooperazione tra i paesi molto maggiore. Chi dice chiudiamo, 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 non fa altro che scaricare solo su alcuni paesi il problema e non fa altro che calpestare i diritti umani delle persone in carne ed ossa. E questo si verifica sia in Libia che perfino nella rotta balcanica. Grazie.
Thank you very much, Mr. Maggiorino. Before giving the floor to the next speaker, I'd like to inform that beyond 12:45 there will be no more interpretation available, so all the presentations will have to be done in English. So let's now move to the next speaker, Mr. Bernard Zimniok from the European Parliament. Please go ahead.
Ja, guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren. Die Covid-Krise hat viele Fragen aufgeworfen und zweifellos viele europäische und weltweit Ökonomien nachhaltig geschädigt und zerstört. Ein Grundsatz beim Umgang mit Krisen gilt aber nach wie vor. Jede Regierung hat alles zu tun, um das Vertrauen bei der Bevölkerung zu stärken, dass sie die Krise handhaben und lösen wird. Genau das Gegenteil war bisher der Fall. Das Thema wurde und wird konstant medial befeuert und hochgekocht. Corona wurde damit das alles überschattende Thema. Nach wie vor ist alles darauf fixiert. Und unterhalb dieser Wahrnehmung wird nun Weichen gestellt für die Zukunft mit dramatischen Auswirkungen. Einer dieser Maßnahmen ist der New Pact on Migration and Asylum. Dieser Pakt wird zur unkontrollierten Öffnung der Tore Europas für Migranten aus aller Welt. Wer hat die Kommission dazu autorisiert? Hier werden die Interessen der europäischen Menschen massiv betroffen. Herr Sassoli, Sie haben gerade gesagt, wir müssen auf die Menschen hören. Welche Menschen, frage ich Sie? Menschen aus Ihrem bezahlten EU-Umfeld? Wo bleibt denn die Abstimmung der Menschen über diesen Pakt? Wo bleibt die Information der Menschen über diesen Pakt? Wird auf die europäischen Menschen überhaupt gehört? Nein, nirgends. Dieser Pakt wird Europa massiv verändern, vielleicht sogar zerstören. Wir werden Abermillionen unqualifizierter, kulturfremder, meist aus archaischen Gesellschaften stammenden Menschen bekommen. Dieser Pakt ist völliger Nonsens in der vorliegenden Form. Ich habe in Zusammenarbeit mit meinen Kollegen in der ID-Fraktion den Pakt analysiert und haben das hier in dieser Form niedergelegt. Hinter all den vielen schönen Worten steckt nichts anderes wie die Aufgabe Europas unter den Deckmäntelchen der Moral. Das Einzige, was wirklich hilft, ist Grenzen dicht. Dann wählen wir, wer zu uns kommen darf und wer ein Recht hat, zu uns zu kommen. Wie es andere westliche Demokratien auch tun. Die EU ist nicht dafür da, den Geburtenüberschuss in Afrika und den Rest der Welt aufzunehmen. Ich erinnere an den Vertrag von Rom, der unter anderem Ziele wie die Verbesserung des Lebens der Menschen in den Mitgliedstaaten festgeschrieben hat. Erinnern Sie sich daran und beginnen wir eine breite Diskussion über diesen Pakt in Europa. Wir müssen die europäische Bevölkerung beteiligen, wir müssen sie darüber abstimmen lassen. Das ist kein Projekt einer Elite, einer EU-Kommission. Dankeschön.
Well, thank you so much. We now move to Mr. Konstantinos Karakonis from the Hellenic Parliament.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. I would like to congratulate the European Parliament and the Portuguese Presidency for this very important conference. I think that the speakers have all talked about the fallout of the pandemic on migration. I'd like to make a general remark. It's obvious that the pandemic has affected in total the admission, deportation and removal procedures of those who were not awarded international protection. It is true that on a global scale, within the pandemic, the number of returns did not exceed 20,000. Greece faces a huge problem because Turkey does not apply any of our bilateral agreements, either with Greece or with the EU. We have filed 1,450 requests for the return from the islands of the Aegean and 519 requests from mainland Greece, and the Turkish authorities refuse to cooperate. On the other hand, it should be noted that as of May of 2020, Turkey has started to accept returns of Turkish nationals on the basis of a European readmission agreement. So we all understand that Turkey is using the pandemic as an excuse in order to avoid restarting the returns on the basis of the joint statement. It is very clear that Turkey, since the events in Evros, has made the management of the migratory flows more difficult. Even Morocco, where certain irregularities had occurred in the past, seems to now comply with returns. That means that the EU has to make it clear that financial assistance in terms of border management has to be connected with the honest collaboration that we seek. We should not forget that Turkey, that requests and finds the EU ready to help it in terms of the Syrian refugees, is also operating in Syria and is causing migratory flows there. It would be very important for the EU to create a centralised European management agency and not to have the returns take place separately from each country. At the same time, we need to reinforce the national infrastructure, especially in the exchange of intelligence and in combating trafficking rings. Finally, after what Mr. Vitorino said, I'd like to underscore that the Greek authorities have taken all necessary measures in order to curb the pandemic in the pre-removal centres, in the police detention facilities and other facilities. But unfortunately, so only 20% seeks to be vaccinated. So I think the EU has to take this into account. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. As I told you before, from this moment on, there will be no translation. So all the three last comments will have to be done in English. The first one is from Miguel Urban from the European Parliament. Miguel, you have the floor. I believe there are some difficulties, so let's move to Anthony Comin from the European Parliament, and then we'll try back Mr. Urban. Well, let's move to Mr. Siros Engerer, also from the European Parliament, and then we'll try back all the other two missing persons. Well, bad luck. I believe none of those three speakers is present at the moment. Is that so? I believe it is. Okay, so this is the ending moment of this set of interventions. So I'll give now back the floor to our speakers, keynote speakers. The first one is Mr. Antonio Vitorino. So I'll give you the floor, Mr. Vitorino, for your final comments. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Well, just very briefly to say that we very much look forward for the conclusions of the European Council next week concerning the migration and asylum policy. We believe that there is a need to revamp the cooperation with the neighboring countries. Several member states have referred to the Western Balkan routes. Others have referred to Turkey. Others have referred to the North African and Central African countries. I think that the new policy instruments of the European Union to engage with those countries, some are countries of origin, others are countries of transit, and others are at the same time countries of origin, transit and destination, we do expect that that dialogue can be enhanced following the conclusions of the European Council. And you can count on the UN system to support that dialogue, which will be extremely important for the economic recovery. And this is my last message. We do believe that without human mobility and without trade, there will be no economic recovery. And when we speak about human mobility, we also speak about migratory flows, regular migration, definitely fighting illegal migration, but at the same time, in all occasions, respecting the fundamental rights of migrants. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Vitorino, and I give now the floor to Mr. Grimes for your final comments. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you very much. First, about the Asylum and Migration Pact, I must agree with the former speaker that in the way it is presented now is completely unacceptable. It must be changed radically so that it will be in the function to preserve European Union, its values, its nations, everything we know and everything we share about Europe in this moment. Second, I also agree that about Turkey, we have to be very cautious on their visa regime if it will be now annulled, or at least much easier to get. You have to know that Erdogan said that as soon as this happens, he will give the Turkish passports to everybody that lives there and send them as mujahids to European Union. And we have to listen very carefully about what Erdogan says, because he sooner or later do everything he says. So we have to take him very, very seriously. And about human rights, first, from my point of view, and I'm sure that every European which is in some position, or in European Union, or in some country, a member of the European Union, must put on the first place human rights, but human rights of the European citizens. Nobody has the right to annul any human right of every European citizen, and nobody has the right to put European citizens in danger. And that's why, I must say again, we have to do everything to stop illegal immigration, to defend our borders, and to send everybody back that is not has no right for asylum according to our laws. First, rule of law is that what is basic for European Union, we have to go back to it. And we don't have to put in power some new, for example, Pact of Asylum Immigration as it is now, that is just making what was wrong in the last few years, what was against the rule of law, that we say, okay, it's now it's okay, and now it's everything legal. That would be the final mistake which will lead to the end of the European Union as we know it now. So we have to go back and search for the consensus, search for better solutions, and we first of all have to put in as the first place human rights and safety of everybody, of every woman, every child, every man that lives in the European Union in the first place, and to make our politics so that people in the European Union, every nation which is member of the European Union will have more children, and so this problem with the mass migration will not be a problem anymore. So if we respect the law and we change our politics, then we'll have better future for the European Union. I will do everything I can to achieve this goal. And thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to the European Union, to all of you, and I wish European Union and everybody here well day and as much success as possible.
Well, thank you so much. But before coming back to the final conclusions by Mr. Thomas Tobe, I'd just like to thank for the opportunity of being associated with this important initiative, and to state as my personal final conclusion for this first session that the truth is that no one can tackle the challenges of migration alone, and that this is obviously an European question that should be held at the European level with the goals of accomplishing basic human rights and basic considerations of humanity. Thank you so much. And now, Mr. Tobe, you have the floor for your final conclusions. Thank you.
Well, thank you, co-chair Peressa. Thank you to all our invited speakers and for the questions from members of parliament and MEPs of this house. I think it is very clear that there are a lot of different views. But I would say that I think it's also very clear that from the European Parliament, we will do our job, and that is that we need to find a way to come together, that we need to find a way to have a European solution. And I think that the European solution should, of course, be about that we have control of our borders, but also that we have an obligation of solidarity, and that we will respect human rights, and that we will also offer opportunities for protection in Europe. And of course, we need to be pragmatic, we need to listen to each other, and we need to come together. I think that is very clear after today's very engaging and, I must say, interesting debate. And with that said, we will put an end to the first session, and I do hope that you will have a productive afternoon at the rest of this conference. Thank you.